Do you want to thrive outside the 9-to-5? Then Mom's Exit Interview Podcast is for you. In each episode, you'll hear from inspirational everyday moms taking control. Entrepreneurs, stay-at-home moms with side hustles, consultants, and more. Plus experts with actionable tips like Rebecca Minkoff and Gretchen Rubin. I'm Kim Ritberg, former Us Weekly and Netflix executive and mom of two. I've got the best boss now, me, and I've never been happier. Whether you're in transition or already made a change, let's create a more flexible and fulfilling life together. Listen to and follow Mom's Exit Interview on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
One of the healthiest things you can do, of course, is get, well, adequate sleep. And for most people, that's at least 7 hours of quality sleep. Hard to get that much sleep. Your mind keeps you awake, you're stressed, your schedule won't allow you, wake up early, can't fall asleep again. 100 reasons out there why you can't get 7 hours of good sleep. But listen, it's important because your body heals when you sleep, right? You clear all those amyloid sort of precursors out of your brain. And if you're not getting enough sleep, you're increasing your risk of various illnesses. And you're making it even harder to lose weight, for sure. Well, an easy way to get some quality sleep, make sure you're getting enough magnesium. Believe it or not, around 75% of people do not have enough, which may help explain why so many people have sleep problems. Don't run to the store to buy the first magnesium supplement you find. Most supplements with magnesium use only the two cheapest synthetic forms. And since they are not the full spectrum, they may not fix your magnesium deficiency or help you sleep better. There are actually 7 unique forms of magnesium, and you need to get all of them if you want to have the calming, sleep-enhancing, optimizing effects. That's why I recommend Magnesium Breakthroughs by Bioptimizers. Simply take 2 capsules before you go to bed. You may be amazed at how much better you sleep and how much more rested you feel when you wake up. For our exclusive offer for our listeners, go to magbreakthrough.com/Drew and use promo code DrDrew10 during checkout to save 10%. Again, that is magbreakthrough.com/Drew. Use code DrDrew10 at checkout for 10% off. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you all for listening to this podcast, for one thing. But do listen to the other stuff we have going on over there at DrDrew.com. The After Dark, of course. And you guys all know about Adam and Drew. And do check out DrDrew.tv, where we do a streaming show. Usually it's 3 o'clock, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursdays. And my next guest will not be a stranger to that show either. She's a friend and a consummate professional. Her podcast is How Not to Raise a Serial Killer with Michelle Ward. Michelle Ward, PhD. Available. Oh, wait, I'm going to talk about past TV shows in a minute. But where is your Twitter stuff? Tell me the Twitter, the social media.
I don't tweet.
You don't do social media?
No, I do. I just started Dr. Michelle Ward on Instagram.
How did you get that? That's pretty easy.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
For you.
I don't know
well
who
done.
I was hooking up
so
with.
So IG, Instagram is where you go. Or Insta, as they say in France, right?
Oui. Je ne sais pas.
Okay. But you just came back from living in France for a while.
Do
you still want to tell us about that a little bit? Because I want to talk about you for a minute because we're friends. We haven't seen each other forever and we have to pile into the studio and talk.
I know.
And I want to catch up. So you were in France for a few years.
Yeah. Both my parents died and I'm like, wow, life's really short. They died in their 70s. And I was like, okay, what can I do to slow down time? And where does time slow down? Provence. I mean, your biggest decision is which rosé to drink. And I drank them all. So my children were 3 and 6, and I pulled them out of school. I quit my job. My husband at the time quit his job, and we moved to France for a year.
Peut-être que je te téléphonerai. J'ai envie de parler français.
See, this is why I'm on this podcast today, so that Drew can show you his beautiful French.
But don't
no.
You didn't learn it while you were there? I thought that's what I'm going to use you as my French teacher.
No.
Then I'm going to call your daughter. I know she picked it up.
She's fluent.
Yeah. That's so frustrating the way kids pick that stuff up.
Well, and she's losing it now, but I lived in Spain for a year, picked it up quickly, or 6 months. Lived in France, and literally all I can say is like, can I have a glass of wine?
People that listen to the podcast know I've been talking about this a little bit. I've been preoccupied with the French lately, not just because I've been studying the language, but I'm attracted to what the youth in France are sort of doing right now, which is sort of they want to reestablish the principles of their republic. I was there in the summer, and my French was pretty good.
Yeah.
And so I started talking to young people because they were in the streets every night. Do you know this?
No, I don't know what you're talking
about. They've been demonstrating in Paris.
They're French. They're always out in the street protesting.
I know. So we seem to have picked up their habits. And so I started talking to them, and they were all like, no, this the overreach of our government in terms of our bodies is very disturbing to us. Like we'll decide if we're going to take a vaccine. We'll decide if we're going to wear a mask. You've told us this thing isn't going to hurt us. We're 22 years old. Right. And now you're going to force us to do something? No, that's not the principle. And they do all the same thing. They'd step closer to me and they'd take their fist and they go, "Vive la liberté. C'est très important. You comprends?" And it's like really important to them. And I thought, wow, that's very appealing to me as compared to what's happening here, where they want more mandates and more intrusions and more of this, which is unappealing to me, strangely enough. So I keep threatening to move to France for a while too.
I'm sure.
Was it great?
Susan would not mind.
Was it great?
It was great. It was. I like to always be honest about my experiences. Like here I'm posting on Instagram, like running through the lavender fields. But other shit went down. Susan, can we say plenty
of words? Yes, yes, yes.
Other stuff happened too.
Other shit went down.
My marriage fell apart. My kids didn't necessarily love preschool there. I mean, and it's hard taking your kids to doctor's appointments and getting visas.
Well, and you didn't speak French.
No.
Yeah.
No,
and
I didn't.
They're not particularly in the Provence. They're not particularly accommodating.
No, but I made wonderful friends because I like people and I, you know, will force myself on them. And so I had advocates everywhere.
So Michelle, you may have seen her on Discovery ID. She you can still see Stalked. Somebody's watching. And she was co-EP of The Mind of a Murderer. I feel like you did other shows over there at Discovery ID. You were guesting on everything.
Yeah.
And used to guest for me on HLN and stuff when we had Jody Arias.
I co-hosted with
you. Did you co-host with me a couple times?
Yeah.
Well, I would always – you know, I think you know. I always go, "Get me Michelle Ward. Get me Michelle Ward. Oh, Dr. Michelle Ward."
I have one.
And then you disappeared. And I was like, God damn it. What am I going to do? How am I going to replace Michelle Ward? I couldn't.
You're the best. Thank you for supporting me.
So Michelle's PhD is in clinical neuroscience and psychology from SC. And early in her career, she studied MRI on murderers and non-murderers. And of course, you must be aware of the story of James Fallon over – yeah. And haven't we – oh, Gary's not in there right now. We've interviewed him a couple of times on this show.
He's funny. I did something with him once too.
What'd you do?
Well, it was on Crime Watch Daily. And we just talked about his brain and you know, why it mimics it looks a lot like a serial killer. But so does Adrian Raine. Adrian Raine, who's the godfather of studying all the biosocial underpinnings of violent crime. He was my god. He was at USC.
Well, isn't that interesting that people – and remember, James Fallon discovered he had psychopathic biology because he was studying psychopaths.
Right.
And how they're drawn to look at the Michelle. Maybe you'll get an fMRI. I'm just saying.
There's a reason I haven't put myself in the machine.
I'm just saying. But that's interesting to me that people would be drawn to that. Would you know? I think if I'm honest with myself about all the years I did in mental health, probably what got me there was my own stuff. Mm. You know, going, what's going on here? Why am I like this? What's on there? And sort of you're naturally kind of. Find it appealing to understand the mind when you don't understand your own that well or you have questions about your own.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And all it is the mind studying itself anytime you're looking at the brain.
Yeah.
But aren't we drawn to what we're curious about and what we don't understand? And
yeah.
I'm not a psychopath, but I'm very attracted to – well, you know, it depends who you ask. But we're drawn to what we don't understand.
Well, and you and I have talked about our mothers, mm-hmm. and they both – can we say this? Can we say
absolutely.
This? I can say it about mine. They both had some unusual traits that might have had psychopathic qualities, or at least they were so strange and extreme we wanted to understand it too.
You are the one who – you met my mom once on set, and then I was – you know, you're my friend, so I told you a lot about my mom, and I was in my 30s, and you looked at me, and you're like, you know your mom's borderline, right? Mm. And I'm like – oh my God. I said this. I was recording my podcast yesterday and I told this story. I said, it took Dr. Drew to tell me my mom was borderline, even though I'd had 9,000 degrees in psychology by then.
So to start to look at it.
I couldn't see it.
Yeah. Well, that's the way kids are, right? That's just our mom, right. And it's just that relationship with it. Mine, strangely, had a very mixed disorder. I've only seen one patient all the years I worked at the psychiatric hospital who reminded me of her syndrome.
Interesting.
Isn't that crazy?
So did she lack the empathy, the remorse, the guilt?
Well, hard to say.
Yeah.
I think it was mixed. It had some borderline features, some schizoid features, some narcissistic stuff. And so what I was subjected to was fusion early. And then as soon as I had to, you know, as a child goes into rapprochement, which is they're moving out into the world, rejection. And what I'm seeing in these days as I think back on it, hated men. And she had some pretty nasty experiences with men, I guess. And so I got as I grew into an adult, I got the full bear of that, full brunt
Do you think that could be part of her borderline features?
Yes.
Borderlines, they love their babies when their babies can't reject them.
Yes.
But as soon as you get older and you're kind of abandoning her.
Yes, correct.
And then the panic of the abandonment, it's rage, right?
Right. And the rage is what came out. Rage. And then also being male. So my sister didn't get as much of it can't even understand what I'm talking about really, which is interesting.
Because her trauma, whether or not borderlines love to exaggerate trauma, and maybe your mom did experience trauma, but it was maybe around males.
Oh, of course. And she had this very strange – so she'd always talk about uncles that touched or something. So, yeah, right.
It's like pandemic and borderlines.
Right.
It does happen, but sometimes it's exaggerated.
Well, I think the way I understand it is sometimes it's a sufficient cause, but probably the reality is like everything in mental health, there's got to be at least a 60% genetic predisposition. And so you get the predisposition and then the inciting agent and then now you get the condition.
Yeah. So a trigger that might not trigger you or me is going to trigger somebody with
exactly.
a predisposition
exactly.
to borderline.
Exactly. And again, to the degree to which her family dynamics set up borderline and stuff, she had all kinds of stuff going on there too for herself that was awful, I'm sure.
It's hard to unpack because there's so much that goes on in your life. When you're growing up, you do and you have to be careful too because – you can blame your parents, but you're also tacitly receiving their genes. So you have an environment.
Don't blame them too much.
Right. And also don't take too much credit.
Right. So, well, I feel like I have more to say about what I was subjected to, but and I want to tell you one of her backstories you'll love because I don't think I knew it when I may have known it when we last talked. I'm not sure. I'm blocking. Which is what I do when I get anxious. So it must be something, some content in here that's problematic for me.
Well,
what did you just say?
Talking about that you tacitly pass down genes.
And I am completely at ease with all of it. I have no problem. But unfortunately, because I'm completely okay with it, I talk about it freely. And maybe that's not fair to her, but she's gone. I have essentially forgiveness. However, you don't do that to kids. You fucking don't do that. You just fucking don't do that.
You don't do it.
So I personally am forgiving, but doesn't make it okay.
You can forgive you can forgive and accept without really endorsing
it. Yeah, I do not endorse it. It was not okay.
Yeah. Do you want to share with us
what she did? Yeah. No, it's just chronic stuff, you know, chronic being, I just remember just rage and yelling and rage and yelling. And
you go home, you go to school and you come back and she's still mad. You're still going to get it.
Just for being me is what, and I think that's the male stuff is that the ugh. And
did she stay married to your dad?
Yeah. Yeah. But the reason I know it wasn't a lot of borderline, because usually when somebody's a lot of borderline, the only thing they're interested in is sociopaths.
Mm-hmm. Isn't
and so
it interesting?
So the male has to be a sociopath. Yeah. And my dad was not a sociopath. He was like a codependent, covert narcissist.
Yeah, so narcissists and borderlines couple too.
I feel like it's sort of more milder borderline or mixed borderline that gets the narcissist. Because the narcissist then contains and manages and all that kind of stuff.
And they kind of get off on a little bit on like the drama because – your mom obviously isn't a strict borderline. She has some psychopathic features, but they tend to be kind of exciting.
Yes, fun, entertaining, and different. Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure he had a lot of that stuff going on.
Drew, I struggle too when I talk about my mom because it's like she's not here. But the way I think of it is, I say good things about her too. But she's at peace now. Like their brains aren't playing tricks on them anymore.
Which is really what this is. What borderline is. But the one piece of story I wanted to share with you is that she had a secret life before she married my dad, and we didn't even know about it.
Shut the front door.
Right? Isn't that
perfect?
Start at
the beginning and leave nothing out.
I found out because I had a neighbor who was interested, who I wrote a book with, the Narcissism book, The Mirror Effect, was with my neighbor, who is essentially a behavioral economics professor at SC. Mm. And he was interested in celebrities and what they are. And I'm like, dude, they're all sick. I was like, he goes, well,
no
I want
offense.
To be, yeah, well, they all have, that's why you become a celebrity. There's something you're trying to fix or there's something motivating you. And he goes, oh, I don't know, I want to meet. So he started coming with me to Loveline every night to meet these people and stuff. And then we wrote the book off of giving essentially a personality inventory to every celebrity that came on the show.
You didn't.
And we published it. And it showed, guess what? Lots of pathology, lots of trauma, lots of addiction.
I mean, way I've read pieces of your book, way but more. I didn't realize that you got these celebrities to comply in filling this out.
Yeah, they filled out. It used to drive Adam crazy, but they all were like, yeah, I know there's something wrong with me. I'd like to know.
Wow.
Every single one of them. We had like one person that didn't in sequence like fill it out. Everyone else was like, thank you. I would love to. I know I'm fucked up. Let's see what's going on here.
And it's more attention. You know.
It's to be fair. Well, because they would all pull me aside during the commercial breaks for all those years and go, what's going on? It's like, oh, Jesus, you know, there's a lot going on here. And of course, I would treat them out in the world and I knew how with the pathology I was seeing and stuff. And again, and I had the sense that becoming a celebrity was a bid to solve the problem of the injury of childhood. Mm-hmm. And we actually built a mathematical model that showed that's what they were doing. They were actually – it was a bid to solve injury from childhood.
Did you discover a common undercurrent or overarching theme of what the injury from childhood was for them, for the celebrities?
No. I would call it the usual suspects.
Right.
Yeah. It was nothing exotic.
Yeah.
It was abandonment, neglect, sexual abuse, physical abuse. Physical abuse probably less so than I'm used to seeing and say on the addiction unit. On the addiction unit, almost every patient I saw had a – where I had to do their history, I had to go, any physical abuse? No, uh-uh. Were you disciplined as a child? Well, sure, I was disciplined. Well, how are you disciplined? Well, they were a little rough. I was like, did they ever hit you? Well, sure, I needed that. And I go, did they ever pick up an object? Every patient, I have to march through these questions because they were in such denial about it. And I'd say, ever pick up an object? Always. No, no, no. I go, are you sure? Oh, yeah. My mom picked up an axe once and a knife. Yeah, literally, those were the answers. Like, yeah, when that time she came at me with a knife, there was that time.
Right.
I was like, okay, that's what I'm asking about.
That actually is like, physical abuse. Let's start over.
Well, and it's a threshold phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Not so much of that in the celebrities, interestingly.
Do you think that the substance abuse came from – I mean, I always go back to how much can we disentangle.
Yeah.
Is it that their parent was also perhaps abusing substances, getting drunk?
Well, we have lots of research on that shows it – bears no real significance.
Huh.
It's the genetics, which is about 60%. Mm-hmm. So the way we say it is the probability of developing addictive disease is accounted for on the basis of genetics, 60%.
That's huge.
On the basis of genetics alone, it's 60%.
That's huge.
And then there are inciting influences, right?
Right.
And then the inciting influence is trauma typically.
So now, what that means is if you adopt your baby out, you're a raging alcoholic, you adopt your baby out, that baby is still more likely than not to become an alcoholic?
And if they came from an alcoholic family.
Right.
If they did not, it's not going to be an alcoholic. It just is not going to happen.
So if they're not raised by the alcoholic.
It doesn't matter.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So
no,
if you
we have lots of data
out,
on that. We have lots of data on monozygotic twins. And
dizygotic and comparing.
Yeah.
Right.
And so there are twins with identical genetics and raised in alcoholic versus non-alcoholic environments. Doesn't make any difference.
And it's such a fascinating way. That's how I designed my studies too. And I explained to people, identical twins share 100% of their non-segregating genes. So they are essentially genetically the same person. Fraternal twins share 50% like regular brothers and sisters. You can test reading ability, psychopathy, alcoholism. You can test anything. Put it into a model. Put it, you know, in those MX models and you can really identify how much is genes. And
that's right.
60% is huge.
60% is huge. And 60% is the number that comes up a lot in mental health. It comes up a lot. When you're talking about depression risk or bipolar risk or these other risks, it just seems to be a common – I don't know why 60%, not 50%.
Oh, right.
But 60% seems to be the number that I keep reading in the literature. So
because biology wants it to be more them.
And it's – right. And it's so specific in addiction. It's like that's the number
that's
in addiction.
The number. It's robust.
But I will tell you, even though that's the number, the genetic burden can vary. I have some patients that are raised in mildly traumatic backgrounds explode with addiction at 17, just explode. And never stops. It just – boom. It just hits the ground running the moment they have their first drink.
God.
And that follows certain genetic patterns too. Certain Native American populations, certain original Mormons, the original biological sect, they tend to have that stuff.
Right. Let's talk about that.
I see a lot of that. That when they would leave the church and come to Southern California, they'd just explode with addiction. And I saw a lot of that. Who else?
We're looking at you, Bishop.
Well, by the way, they would take a lot of them back and do a pretty good job with getting their addiction. I saw some like, nah, I can't complain. They got it kind of under control. But what was the other population I was using? So it's Mormons.
I like when I make you nervous and you forget what you were going to say.
It may be the
the trauma of your childhood.
Cherokee is the other one that's really prevalent for exploding with the disease. I can't remember the other group I saw. Isn't that weird?
Well, is it related to the ADHs and MEOs, the metabolites of alcohol?
People try to, you know, probably not. Okay. There's a lot of – at one time that was a very significant theory and it just sort of – the only thing that was left behind was that the way women metabolize alcohol is different than men, and it increases their risk of alcoholic liver disease. And that fits my clinical experience 100%. If a woman is a heavy drinker, it's heavy enough to need to see me, she has alcoholic liver disease.
Uh-oh.
Now, I'm not saying cirrhosis, but I can feel her liver when I do a physical exam, essentially 100% of the time.
Can we undo that a little
bit? Sorry about that. You can undo it, yeah, because you just slow down, Michelle.
How slow?
So, well, moins qu'en France. yes, it's often fatty liver disease or what's called.
Foie gras? That's fatty liver.
That's fatty liver. It's like that. Or it's the hepatic. You get this kind of fibrotic thing that's not cirrhotic necessarily sometimes with women. It can be reversed. It can be reversed. Mm-hmm. If you get cirrhosis, it doesn't reverse.
And Dr. Henneberg yesterday told me my liver felt fine.
So good. Okay. So you're fine. So yeah. He's endorsing your consumption of alcohol. It's good. the French have the highest incidence of alcoholic liver disease in the world.
Shocking.
And they co-sign all the bullshit. it's no big deal. They just, you know, it's just how we live. It's just like, oh, dude, this is bad outcomes. Anyway, so I'll tell you my mom's story now. So my friend who wrote this book and was doing this testing with came on the show early. And on the way down one night, we started talking for some reason about my mom, who was an actress and an opera singer.
Opera singer, yeah. I remember that.
But she was an actress and she was working in noir, film noir. She was in a couple of big ones. And he was like, I am such a fan of film noir. I'm a big, you know, I'm nut with it. So he looks her up while I'm on the air and he goes, I found a website dedicated to your mother.
What?
Yeah. And so I'm like, oh, interesting. And he goes, here it is. Helene Stanton was Stanton was her stage name. Married to some dude I've never heard of in 1949 or whatever it was. He was a silent film star, had been in over 1,000 films or something. He was a Western silent film star. She was his fifth or sixth wife. He was 60 or 58 at the time. She was 18.
No.
And – oh, yes. And was brought here, you know, by him and groomed, obviously. God knows what she was running away from, right? I mean, who knows what horror in her home that she was running away from. But she, you know, lived with him for 10 years.
10 years?
Yeah, 10 years married.
And you never heard about
10 years,
this.
Wait, it gets better. 10 years. And she's Don Draper. You know, Don Draper would just go, it just didn't happen. Just whoof. And that was so familiar to me when I saw Don doing that to himself and Peggy and stuff. So anyway, so 10 years. Then fast forward – like a couple years after I discovered this, maybe even a year after I discovered it, Adam and I were doing a large event in Santa Barbara and we had sort of a meet and greet beforehand. And this woman comes up to me and she goes, I need to make amends to you for my grandfather. And I was like, really? What? Who's your grandfather? He was married to your mom for 10 years and her stepson was my dad. There was a stepson she took care of for 10 years. And I said, well, I'd love to talk to him. How interesting would that be? So I called him up. He was a retired dentist in Stockton. And stepson for 10 years. And one day she sat him down and said, I'm leaving, and never spoke to him again.
That's not true.
Swear to God.
I'm so confused. I have so many questions. First of all, a borderline couldn't have kept that to herself because she would need to tell you about all the trauma involved.
That's true.
But how did you not ever hear this from anybody? How was that never used
we don't
against
even know-
you?
That's what a borderline would have done. That's why I know she had a mixed disorder.
Mixed disorder.
Yeah. She was about probably 84 years old when we discovered all this. My sister freaked out. And I said – my position was, you know, if she's taken it this long and she wants to take it to the grave –
You let her?
Let her do it. And my dad was gone at that point. And we didn't even know if he ever knew. We don't really know if he ever knew. Here's a real comedy. So in this very studio, Susan did her – she used to do this podcast with psychics once in a while. Mm-hmm. And they would bring people in for the psychics to read. And she brought my mother and she agreed to do it. And it was James von Prague. And And he didn't know who he was reading, just this woman on the phone. And first thing he says is, well, there's somebody here. He says he was your first husband. And she goes, I didn't have a first husband. He goes, oh, no, no. He's insisting. He's insisting he was your first husband. And she was like, oh, you mean Mort, my husband, the doctor? He goes, no, this guy was like in entertainment or something. I mean, literally.
He didn't give it up.
And she was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then she asked my mom back with another psychic. The same fucking thing happened.
No. And now totally you're making me believe in psychics.
I know, it was weird. I've seen them do weird stuff. This was one of the weird things. But the comedy is her going, I don't know what you're talking about.
Didn't happen.
Don Draper, right. Just didn't happen. And so to me, the really telling part of the story was leaving a child that you've raised for 10 years behind without a thought.
No.
Like, boom, gone. And that fit with how I experienced her.
So her relationship with you, was she dutiful in taking care of you?
Anxious. Anxious, not dutiful. Like overwhelmed, anxious. You know, because I had some autonomy and that freaked her the hell out. Mm. So I pushed harder, right? I need to get out of here. This is just,
too much. How here we are again with the crux of you can traumatize a kid, and if they don't have the predisposition to fail or to become an alcoholic or become a criminal,
right.
You can end up Dr. Drew.
It's a very dangerous diathesis, right? Mm-hmm. It's either going one way or the other.
Right. And
it's like being a dragon mom, too. It goes one way or the other. It goes you become a perfectionistic, hyper-compulsive workaholic, or you become a criminal. There's no in-between.
That's right. They do. And is that the trauma? Probably, right? I mean, you probably became anxious being parented like that, and you're also related to the anxious person.
Yeah. Oh, I had panic attacks and depression and stuff and you know, in college, and had a lot of unclear – my challenge early was unclear identity. Maybe I would have been transgender in today's world. My identity was all over the place, and I couldn't figure out an identity. And when I got – I moved in and out of my scientific training, and when I got back to it, I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. I got it. And it was mine at that point. I was able to construct it on my own behalf and sort of never looked back. And by the way, the more I built that life, that pursuit, which I found so satisfying, the more I had to get the hell away from my family fortune. Yeah. I was like, whoa, gotta get away from these guys.
Because that's the risk factor. It's triggering. So this begs the question. Sorry, I didn't know you were being interviewed today, actually.
Okay, please.
This begs the question, what were the protective factors? So what was it about you, other than high IQ, which is always a very good protective factor, that made you go this way rather than becoming a cutter, an alcoholic, a criminal?
I was, for whatever reason, always aversive to bad behavior.
Mm.
Always. I had a lot of I think one of my things is I am guilt avoidant. And so a way to be guilt avoidant is just to be perfect. So then you can never feel guilty. Because I used to have one of my recurring dreams was being persecuted or sort of accused of something I didn't do. That was an overwhelming idea for me. So I was just always just didn't do anything wrong. Now, I was left with certain narcissistic traits that I had to iron out in therapy. Mm-hmm. And so it made me less rigorously honest than I should have been, like in terms of impacting on other people. And so now I really live by Kant's, you know, first law, is essentially behave as though somebody's got a camera on you at all times. And it's what he said was behave as though your choices can be a universal moral dictum at all times. And I found that to be a very good guiding thing. And of course, I was already disposed that way. I like that kind of thing. Why I was disposed to that, I don't know. I was attached to my dad, I would say.
Okay.
And although he was narcissistic, right, he was a very good person.
A narcissist can be wonderful people.
Yeah. But I think they both would have been just, as I try to reconstruct it, unbelievably rejecting and abandoning had I not sort of been that. I was able to get stuff from them by being perfect.
I'm getting anxiety just listening to it. I'm not breathing.
Because it's so familiar?
Well, I'm an empath, so I'm feeling very bad about little baby Drew.
Yeah, little baby Drew's hurt pretty good. Yeah. But it's all integrated now. It's all good.
You obviously turned out okay.
I turned out okay, but I was okay before therapy, but I'm actually okay now.
Yeah, I'm a huge...
I was functioning high before therapy. I just wasn't all there. yeah. the way I should have been.
Well, and two, destigmatize therapy.
Now you're making me anxious.
I'm sorry. It's true, and I had really troubling childhoods. When you mentioned Kant, are you talking about Immanuel Kant?
The
philosopher. I live by his one. It's funny, you and I both live by something he said.
Yeah.
Reject the greater miracle. And I use that. I'm also a litigation consultant. I use that all the time.
What is that?
So he said, when talking about religion, the Bible was the rumor of Jesus Christ spread around the planet quicker than any rumor ever had at that time.
Since COVID. COVID is the latest thing. The rumors around COVID were
Well, Jesus
right
is coming back,
thing.
Too.
Maybe like, that's what this is all about. But anyway.
So his argument was, okay, so what's more unlikely, that a man came down who could walk on water and speak to God,
right.
or that a rumor just spread really quickly?
Yes.
One must reject.
Marcus Aurelius said the same thing, I believe.
Oh, God. I hope I'm not attributing it to the wrong person.
Well, hang on. Well, Gary, get in here. We'll ask him to look it up.
Gary, the philosopher.
Anyway, there were philosophers that had said versions of that, you know, which is more likely.
Right.
You know, that this is a rumor or a distortion or that a miracle actually happened. And by the way, I think it was framed as violating the laws of physics.
Oh.
In other words, I've heard modern incantations of this. It's been, which is more likely? There's some distortion, it's a myth, or the laws of physics were violated.
Exactly.
Right.
So you reject the least likely thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to, if it's okay with you, I want to go back to your mom really quickly.
Yes, of
because
course.
I know she's not a strict borderline, but I have been watching snippets of the Depp Heard trial.
Yes, she's mixed too, right?
She's mixed.
Histrionic and borderline.
And what I've noticed is now everyone's getting an education.
I know
on
she has done a public service.
That's what I want to say. 100%.
I am so grateful. I don't know whether to thank Johnny Depp or Deborah Heard or Amber Heard or both of them, but they have done a public service by bringing to light what this is.
Yes.
And let me tell you something. What I have found myself saying lately is, you know, I saw the cluster B pandemic emerge. Mm-hmm. When I was working in the early 80s in a psychiatric hospital, the admission diagnosis page would have all kinds of different personality profiles. OCD, mm-hmm. paranoid, blah, blah, blah. By 1992, it was 100% cluster B. Everybody had cluster B. That's how I knew we had to write this book. Narcissism,
Why?
Borderline sociopath. I think we had a pandemic of childhood trauma. I think
it wasn't Fatal Attraction.
No. It was childhood trauma. And everyone, every borderline that came in had at least 20 lawsuits under her belt.
Of course.
Right.
They're so litigious.
And they were using the legal system to act out this stuff. The legal system finally figured that out and was not letting them – because people get punished for frivolous lawsuits now. They were rewarded for it back then. But now those people have abused the Me Too stuff, are in government, and are going and acting out in other domains. And so this is a really serious public service. So you can look at these people and go, oh, that's projection. That's acting out. That's borderline. That is not somebody who actually is doing governing or actually – cares about the Me Too movement, for instance, right?
I could not agree with you more. It's another platform. It's another platform if they can't
– To use as a cudgel to act out their aggression and unregulated
and
hostility.
They're the hero or the victim in every story.
Yep.
It's another platform to talk about their victimization, to create a villain.
Yep.
You know, and that's what they do. Everyone in their life is a hero and then becomes a villain, could become a hero again, and their orbits have quick changes of people constantly. And I don't have very many followers on my brand new social media account, but one thing – when I posted something saying, hey, everyone, look up Dr. Curry's testimony.
Yes.
And she did an incredible –
Yes, I thought so too.
Not only she really pretty, so I wanted her dead, but she did the best job I've ever heard anyone describe the disorder.
Yes.
And it really – I was like, oh my God, this should have been taught in high school.
Correct.
We can all learn from it now.
Well, you know who else did that was Dr. DeMar – She was on the stand for Jodi Arias, DeMar something.
Dang it.
And she did a very similar job.
Really?
Very similar. Not as cohesive. It wasn't all at once. It was just sort of, well, these are the qualities.
Janine DeMart.
DeMarte.
Everything.
I don't. My aging, I used to. Now I don't. Now it kind of bothers me too.
Somebody just brought up Antonio Damasio, who was like, that's in my world. And you're like, oh, he said this, this, and this. And I'm like, I can't even remember four things.
Well,
he said.
What I said was, I have a, well, it's called an overlearned behavior, of overlearned learning, right? I have a lot of overlearned stuff in my head. And one of his characterizations of the self, because it's something I was very interested in when I started studying neuroscience, because he had a very unique view of self, right? I was sort of more from the James Masterson world, you know, and I've since moved into other categories. But Damasio's, I had to learn it because it was so profound to me, because there is something in it. He said that the self is a repeatedly reconstructed neurobiological process that endows experience with subjectivity.
I mean, it's so eloquent.
But, yes.
You know, deducing what that means for the layperson.
Well,
is probably
it means
not.
That. The self is not some eternal thing. It's wiring in your brain that is rewired all the time. And the things that fire together, wire together. So you have to keep it going. And something about experience in that wiring causes this thing we call subjectivity. It's not telling you why it happens or how it happens. It's just that subjectivity is a key piece of self.
It's the mechanics of it. It teaches you that.
That there's a mechanics and subjectivity is important. That's all. It's not a full self description by him. And he had this sort of notion, we're getting way off topic, but he had this notion of the proto-self, that there's some sort of subjective something, and then things are piled on top of that.
Okay.
So you didn't get to your question about my mom. I think you were going to ask me something.
Well, I wanted to know how it affected – I'm sorry. If your poor listeners are like, what is this podcast
about?
They love
this stuff. They love this.
Okay, good.
Believe me.
I wanted to know how it affected your sister differently, because the bond between a mom and a daughter is different. And a lot of your identity, in my experience, comes from your mother.
Yeah. And again, as far as the borderline stuff with my mom goes – I mean, she was able to maintain relationships over long periods of time and didn't do anything weird or acting out. Right. That's not a borderline thing. Whatever it was, my sister is not able to in any way appreciate what my experience was. Like, couldn't get it. Like, why are you so angry with her is always sort of the thing. Why does it? Yeah. So I'm sure, you know, that being so, she fed into the idealization. She absolutely fully co-signed the idealization, and I did not.
No.
And that was a –
Well, you weren't being idealized anyway.
Right. Venal sin. That's it. Yeah, right? It's like You know I love my friend Jordan Harbinger, always focused on getting useful, practical insight out of his brilliant guest. Not just wishy-washy self-help stuff. It is real wisdom that you can use. I enjoyed the Jordan Harbinger Show. I think you will too. Again, you search it at the Jordan Harbinger Show. Most recently, I noticed he had something in there I'm going to tell you about, which just fascinated me. It's an inside story of wealth, power, corruption, and vengeance in today's China. That's right. People were talking about this on the internet, the red roulette. That's the kind of thing you get at the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's why I love listening to Jordan Harbinger. Definitely check it out. Jordan's an interesting guy. He's got multiple degrees. He's a professional guy. He's got a law degree, speaks multiple languages, has had a crazy life experience. There is an episode for everyone. Again, I enjoy the show. I think you will too. Search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That is H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You'll thank me for checking out the Jordan Harbinger Show. ED is more common than most people think. In fact, 52% of men between the ages of 40 and 70 will experience some form of erectile dysfunction. That's why I am happy to say that we have more efficiencies thanks to the use of the internet. And the benefits of ED treatment can help you reconnect with your partner. Roman is that efficiency ready to give you confidence, self-assurance. Roman system is completely confidential, totally discreet. No labels on the packages or anything like that. And with Roman, you get free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. And of course, a U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. And if medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with two-day shipping. Again, it is exceedingly common, and they're easy solutions. Whole process, straightforward, convenient. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/Drew, complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving your home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a U.S. licensed healthcare professional and take care of it. It's common. It has a treatment. Treatment is safe. If it's appropriate, you will get it at GetRoman.com/Drew. Go there today. And if you're prescribed, get $15 off your first month of ED treatment. Make sure you're ready to have confidence and control this summer. Roman, ready. Burnout is common these days. Gosh, we're all under a lot of stress. And of course, we can feel overwhelmed. We can have psychiatric symptoms. We can have physical symptoms like lack of motivation, irritability, or even joint ache, sleep disturbances. Well, this podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy, and BetterHelp Online Therapy wants to remind you to prioritize yourself. I've been referring patients, family, been very pleased with the services provided, and why not? Why shouldn't we be able to access mental health services like any other health services via Zoom, via the internet, via the phone? BetterHelp, customized online therapy, offers video, phone, even live chat sessions with your therapist. You don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to, and you certainly don't have to worry about stigma or worry about the discomfort of running into somebody in the waiting room. And with BetterHelp Online Therapy, more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/Drew. That is Better, HELP.com/Drew. Grilling season is here. I don't know about you, but I am pumped to I've already dusted off the grill and get that barbecue going. What's more exciting, I have the perfect instrument to make sure I don't undercook or overcook any of my meats. Meter, sleek Bluetooth meat thermometer that tracks the temperature of your food and lets you know when it's ready to come off the grill. You follow the cook on the phone so you don't have to keep checking up on it and opening the grill and closing it. You get the perfect steak, juicy chicken every time with Meter, right? It's M-E-A-T-E-R. It's not M-E-T-E-R, but it is a Meter. Super simple, super easy, perfect results. It can be used in a grill, smoker, oven, whatever you're using, literally anywhere. Comes with cloud service. You can have limitless range, so you can still monitor the meat while you're doing something else. Monitor your steaks or chicken on the app. You've got other things to do. You can just go do them. This is the perfect tool to be a grill master. Great for Father's Day, any holiday. It's a great gift. Get 10% off with code Drew when you shop at meter.com, M-E-A, like meat, M-E-A-T-E-R.com. Again, get 10% off with code Drew at meter.com, M-E-A-T-E-R.com. 10% off on meter.com with code Drew. Fire up the grill and get cooking with Meter.
Was it hard for you to not be validated by the only other person in your environment at that time, your sister?
No, because we had a big enough age differential too. That was another thing. My mother was younger when she was raising me. There was like a 6-year age difference. And so I was rejecting everybody. I was like, I'm out. It's interesting. I think my father's brother's family had some stuff going on too, because my cousin, who is my age, just left for France when she was in 11th grade and just stayed there for 2 years. And it was like, she's out. And then she became expatriated, lived there for the rest of her life, and just would like, this family's like, I can't deal.
That's a boundary.
In both, the uncle who, again, had a very different childhood experience than my dad was highly – they were immigrants running away from the Ukrainian genocide, right? The Holodomor, which now people are starting to understand a little bit. Yeah. This is Stalin's thing.
Yep. They
were part of that diaspora.
Yeah.
And got here just in time for the Depression.
Perfect. Welcome to the party.
And so my dad was like 8 years old at that time, and it profoundly traumatized him. So his thing was to traumatize me financially. So he had to when I was
What are you talking about?
Michelle, we got to talk about psychopaths, which is what I intended this to be about. But we'll go ahead and talk about my story if people are
interested. I struggle to be interviewed. I like interviewing. So,
well, it's fine. It's turned the tables on me. It's something I've not done for this podcast, so it's good. He, at the age of, I would say, 2 on, would guilt and shame and scare me with financial catastrophe. And of course, he became somebody I felt like I needed to protect from his narcissistic core. Like, I had to take care of him, right? Because I could feel it. I could feel the pain that was under there. But one of the explicit things that was acted out on me was, let's say I was 8 years old, just for the sake. But this started when I was like 2 to 4, something like that. Oh, you need a new pair of shoes? Okay, get them. I mean, you know. Not the fancy ones, but whatever. Oh, whatever. Go get what you need. But here's the deal. When you come home, well, tomorrow, you'll have to come visit me in the poorhouse. It's okay. I'll be in the window. You can wave to me through the window.
At 2?
At early, like really early shit.
Because I have a two and a half year old. That's like hard for me to understand.
I can say 2 because we moved out of our house in Alhambra when I was about 2 and a half. And I was already fully armed with the poorhouse by the time we ended up in Pasadena. And I can picture the place to this day, seeing my poor dad in the window waving back to me because I needed shoes. Oh, and this went on forever.
So your existence was a burden financially for him, and you had to protect him.
Well,
from
and
that.
And what's interesting, my growth and development was right, which is sort of my mom's thing too, right?
Yeah, don't you have your feet grow?
Don't grow. Don't need grow. Clothing because that's going to cause a disaster.
I'm telling you, I know your listeners want to know more about you, so I think I'm doing a favor.
You're doing a nice job.
It's hard for me to hear that because it is traumatizing. And then you also think, what did I say to my kids growing up?
Oh, I know, of course. And I'm, you know, and millennials have their own stuff, and I'm trying. And I go to – I run to the other side of the boat. Do whatever you want. Be yourself. Be your own person. You know, and it's like, oh, I wish you'd give me some more guidance.
Oh, God. Sort of, you know, we can't win.
Right, right.
This is
– Well, that's parenting, right? You can't win. And I fully prepared for that. And I think I've gotten better just appreciating what it is they do and being supportive of whatever that process and things are. Whatever it is, I can celebrate.
You seem to. Every time I talk to you, you're talking about the next amazing thing they're doing.
Yeah, but again, that's through my – but maybe they don't want to be doing an amazing thing. Maybe they want to regroup. So a couple of them have just been regrouping lately.
You can't do this to yourself.
What?
I mean, you're punishing yourself for supporting them and then punishing yourself for
them
too much.
Yeah, and to be fair, that probably gets through on some level. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that they feel responsible for that, I don't want that. I don't want that.
So, when you talk about first of all, I kind of follow your kids, but they were educated the same place my kids are being educated.
Yes. How's that going?
Thanks to you.
Is that good?
I love it.
It's great.
I love it.
Although I got to tell you something, I don't recognize – that institution I recognize still, but the higher education institutes that I went to or I sent my kids to, I don't recognize them anymore.
Mm.
They're just so changed in terms of their priorities and what they're doing. I'm not sure I would send the kids to the same places again.
Okay. We're going to have to talk about that when we get older.
Yes. Please do. Please do, because I was hardcore – about it because it was so important in terms of changing how my mind operated and how I continue to learn and, you know, these things I'm so grateful for. I'm so grateful for my education. Mm-hmm. It was exceptional. And I have kind of a lazy brain naturally, and it trained me through all that. And it's
funny.
Thank
you for saying you have a lazy brain. I say that to people all the time. I'm like, yeah, but look at your accomplishments. I'm like, that has nothing to do with that.
No, it's where I would go had I not been in a rigorous environment where I stepped up. And it had my son. I saw go through the same process, and he's now grateful also that he became a math major and stuff, and that was not his. That's how his brain worked, and now it does, and he can use that. I can tell you, for me, when I really noticed it, I was always I had great science training, like really good, and I'm noticing it's being very important now because science has sort of weirdly gotten weird. But on my feet in the wards during my third, fourth years and residencies, I could think on my feet better than my peers.
Mm.
I could just use that instrument quicker, better, with greater alacrity and to greater service of the patients and stuff. I was just so appreciative. But anyway, so what my sister saw versus what I saw, different. It was different. That's often the case, right? It's the siblings don't always see the same thing and are not always subjected to the same thing. And they have their own biological stuff going on too, whatever that is.
And I find that to be challenging when you're the sibling, because A, it's like, we were both there. We took different things away. Like my sister and I, both raised by borderline, she got very different messages than I got. You know, I got the take care of yourself, never, ever have to depend on anybody. And she got the cater to the man.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot different.
Yeah. She's 5.5 years older than me. So the same, you know, she was experiencing at different stages, the divorces, many divorces. But it's interesting for me to hear you talk about your parents, what it did to you, the protective factors that sent you on this trajectory rather than a more deleterious trajectory, and then how you struggle with supporting your kids but also not putting pressure on your kids and accepting them, but maybe they don't want to be accepted.
Yeah.
What the hell?
That's parenting, man.
This is why I have a podcast of how not to raise a serial killer, because let's just set the bar low. Like, as long as they're not killing people.
So let's spend the last 10 minutes talking about that. So what is it about serial killers and psychopaths? What are we going to learn about this in your podcast?
I mean, listen.
And by the way, you and I have a streaming show to do, and that's all we're going to talk about in that one. Prepare yourself. Now we've gotten all this off our chest.
We've had our therapy. We can move on to our next subject.
Oh, my God.
For anyone listening, that was 2 months ago, so check that out.
At Dr. Duck TV, you can find it.
You're going to have to find it. Dig deep with all your free time.
Yeah. No. So, Michelle, you've got your podcast. Don't you have a book out too now?
If if I didn't have lazy brain, I would have.
Okay,
a book.
So it's how not to raise a
serial killer. How not to raise a podcast
is what we are is what we are promoting. And I just said, you know, here's Gary's email, here's Michelle's email. Get on these shows. Let's go talk because I'm always happy to talk to you.
Well, I'm always anytime I can be in a room with you because. But then I'm like, do people want to hear how you and I we digress? And
yeah.
Then, but you're good about bringing it back again.
Yeah. So we're bringing it back right now.
Okay. So how not to raise a serial killer? The reason I came up with that, and God bless Cloud 10 and iHeart for letting me just run with it, is true crime. Everyone's obsessed. I've been working in true crime forever.
Why do you think people are obsessed? I've wondered that myself. I'm not sure I understand.
The genre is, you know.
Killing.
Yeah. But
literally.
The genre, the people who watch it.
Killing is killing.
Killing is killing. Are women.
Yes, you know, I know.
From this age to this age.
You know,
age.
South Park did a whole thing about this.
They predict everything.
Yes. And they do their own candy.
They predict everything.
But they called it murder porn.
Well, that's what I was about to say.
Yeah.
I've been working in murder porn for a long time, and I'm like, wait a minute. Those of us in the ivory tower, we have some answers. We know why people kill, and we know how to prevent.
Mm.
We know how to nudge a psychopath to become Bill Clinton versus Jeffrey Dahmer. No, bad example.
No, that's good.
Well, he's a schizotypal, so we'll say Ted Bundy.
Okay. Because I've heard multiple psychopath experts talk about Bill Clinton as a pro-social psychopath.
Yeah. He's my favorite one.
And pro-social psychopath, my favorite one. Pro-social psychopaths can be very effective, very useful.
Need them.
Yeah, we need them, right.
You
yeah,
need
yeah.
surgeons.
Yeah.
You need hedge fund managers.
Yeah.
You need people to run countries.
But when they're pro-social, they have an exquisite compass because that's all they've got is sort of this objective idea of morality.
Well, it's goal-driven.
Not an emotional idea.
That's right.
Of yeah.
If their goal is pro-social, they will stick to that.
Yeah.
And if you can keep omega-3s. Let's just put that in everyone's coffee and everyone's baby bottle. I just want to say that now because it's a protective factor for everything. But
early or all the way along the lifespan?
Take it today.
Well, I do take it every day. And because it's now its effect on lipid metabolism has sort of been marginalized. It's probably not a big deal.
But that's not why we take it.
Okay. And I'm on my last bottle and I was thinking, this is it. I'm going to finish it after this. But is it DHAs or the mixed or what?
So they've all been studies. DHAs is great. EPA, they've all been studied.
Because I normally, when I was really into it, I was taking a mix, you know, a usual, just a high quality mix and DHA supplement.
You might
need
both.
I always felt like DHA was more neuroactive. Right?
So it not only – they tell you to take it when you're pregnant.
Yeah.
Gary, your wife, let's hope. And
– oh, is there another one coming?
Oh, she was taking – no.
Okay.
Let's
kitchen's closed.
It.
Kitchen's closed, but she was taking everything under the sun when that was a thing. So
folate,
I'm sure that was
folate and DHA.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's in my mix. I'm still working on the mix you gave me at the beginning of COVID. So maybe we need to update my –
I gave you –
you gave me like a regimen. It was vitamin D. It was I'd have to read it off, but
I'm
there's
sure
five.
There was...
There's five I was taking.
Okay.
I'm taking every day.
All right.
Good for you. Well, they tell you to take it when
you're
pregnant.
I've stopped the zinc, just FYI. But go ahead.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about COVID, but you probably have already talked about it a lot.
We'll talk about it this afternoon.
This afternoon. Yeah. They tell you for neurodevelopment, it's incredibly important.
Yes.
That's great for brain power, you know, just having a smarter
healthy brain.
Kid.
Healthy brain. Yeah.
But it is one of the biggest reducers in conduct disorder, aggression.
Again, intrauterine or all the time. All right, everybody. Kids are going to DHAs.
There's a study.
So what's the balance? How much? Do we know?
Well, if you're actually just feeding it to yourself or to your kids,
yeah, just
three
a supplement
days a week.
Every day.
Well, the
How
fish
much?
Itself, I would do three days a week. The supplement, whatever's recommended is enough.
Well, there is. There's. It's all over the
it's
place.
It's all. Yeah. God damn. Well,
okay.
Why are you asking me questions?
So here's a good one. There's a Nordic Naturals has a supplement, a lipid called Ultimate Omega, and it's a very high quality omega, and it's a good mix. They have one with D also. So if you want to get your vitamin D, you get it that way. But that's a good one. I think, that's good.
I think they're the company that did the study or promoted this. They had a drink called Smartfish.
Oh, interesting.
And they gave it to the population of children in – I think it was in Norway. I'm not positive. I know we've done it in Mauritius. And they gave half of the kids either – there was many studies, but the drink, half the kids just fish. The other half – two different studies. And then the control group, they got normal food, didn't get the drink. Followed them for many, many, many years, and there was no crime in that group, and baseline crime, the normal what you would expect.
How come this
crime.
Isn't promoted more? I've not.
This
heard
is
this.
Why
I've
I wanted to do this podcast
okay.
because the Ivory Tower hangs on to this information, and I'm like, look, if I'm going to be in murder porn, I'm going to feed the vegetables with
Great.
The murder porn
Absolutely.
Because we can't exploit true crime and not do something to stop it. I had to go to CrimeCon recently. I'm like, y'all realize people have to be killed for us to be doing this? Like,
it's weird.
It felt very, for the first time, I was like, this is unholy. So I'm like, if I can make a difference, if I can show people how to reduce crime, then I'm totally cool still doing true crime.
In true psychopathy, like James Fallon, always been talked about more as a neurobiological process, less of an environmental kind of thing.
I'd agree.
Is it accurate to say that somebody with that genetic neurobiological underpinning who has severe childhood trauma, that's the killer?
It can happen without that. So yeah. It lives in the amygdala. We can actually look on a scan and see differences in the amygdala of a psychopath.
I thought there was a parietal thing too, right?
There's the cingulate gyrus. There are, yeah. But if you think of the limbic system.
The cingulate is sort of the emotional thing.
Yeah. Right. So yeah. If you think of the limbic system as a whole, which drives our emotions, it's when you're feeling rage, when you're feeling any sort of big emotion, it's coming from your amygdala. Fortunately, we all have good prefrontal cortexes.
Starting in the amygdala, right?
The limbic system. It starts in the limbic system.
Yeah. It's so-called. You know, that term is sort of being
– Well, that's
we
why –
We all know what we're talking about when you say limbic, but people are getting weird about
it. They're getting weird about it.
Yeah.
It's a region of the brain. Yeah. It's very prehistoric.
Yeah. It connects to many different things. It does many different things.
Right.
So the idea of a separate triune brain is sort of old.
And you can't, right? Because everything's feeding back to – they're circuits and everything's feeding back. Information goes back to your limbic system, which changes what it puts out.
I feel like amygdala is sort of the saliency. Like this is salient. This is important.
This is important. Yeah. And we measure that. And the studies are robust when it comes to the amygdala. So I always go back to her and the hippocampus to a degree. But if we can measure it. So a person's going to be born with those traits regardless. The trauma can help nudge you to pro-social and antisocial behavior. Mm. And we can talk about that later, about what you can do to nudge a kid to – your kid's going to be
– Remind me when we talk – because we're running out of time here today. And today's been all about me.
I wanted it to be that way. So do your listeners.
But remind me this afternoon, we should start right there. That how do you – this very topic, the neurobiology, how you nudge it. It's interesting, the pro-social part. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like the pro-social ones are – correct me if I'm wrong – are under-stimulated in childhood in some way, sort of aren't getting enough sort of stuff, and they come to their own place with it.
You're hitting on the low autonomic arousal that exists in psychopathy.
Correct.
And I could do a whole podcast on that. But you're right. And one of the answers to make your kids – pro-social psychopath versus antisocial is give them stimulation. Let them learn a sport. Let them run their own little business so that they're not picking on kids in class.
So
we'll
Gary,
talk later.
Or have people pick on them like Chris and Ray. So the obvious question is Adam a pro-social psychopath?
We've talked about this.
We're out of time.
Whatever. I have great admiration, by the way, for pro-social psychopaths. They are very – they can be very good moral arbiters because they really
take the emotion out of morality.
That's right. They don't get clouded by our feeling system.
Do we love psychopaths, Drew? Is that what we're saying?
Well, you do. It's all you do. It's your whole time. I do not like non-pro-social psychopaths.
Fair.
Pro-social. I'm a big Bill Clinton fan. He did some horrible shit. Mm-hmm. What he did to Monica Lewinsky and stuff. But as a moral leader and a governor. So I thought the guy was fantastic. I'm a huge fan of his. So yeah, I'm a fan of pro-social psychopaths. So
me too.
There's nothing wrong with being that. That's my point. I have James Fallon. I have a good friendship with him. You know, I wouldn't want to be married to him.
No.
And he will tell you don't want to be married to him, interestingly, too.
God, self-reflection.
By the way, for the assholes who want to tweet Adam, please know from my tone I'm trying to be humorous here, people.
Yes.
It's all jokes. Come on.
It's all funny.
And
Fallon knows it because his family tells him that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. And then he can accept that feedback. I should say, evolutionarily, there's arguments that psychopathic people are more evolved.
Oh, that's interesting.
I
think alcoholics are more evolved.
What did you say?
This afternoon.
Okay.
Alcoholics is a higher evolutionary state. I believe it 100%.
So I'm going to keep drinking.
And again, for those of you listening, go to drdrew.tv and rewind about 2 months and you'll find it this afternoon.
All right. So we'll get to all that this afternoon. Michelle, great to see you as always. So glad you're back in Pasadena. And if I start winding up some television, you know you're going to be in this because
I
got to use you all the time. And I think people will understand why. Because you'll understand if you watch the pod, how not to listen to the pod, how not to raise a serial killer. And Apple Podcast, anywhere
everywhere.
You get a podcast, get it everywhere. And please do subscribe and listen and go
or
back
just
and
download
listen.
Download it.
Download it. Yeah, do all the stuff because you'll want
to review. Just do all the stuff.
Unless you don't like it, then just don't.
That's not what you can tell. If you're not likely, you're not going to like it. You're going to do it. All right, Michelle, we'll see you soon, and I'll see everybody else next time.
For Colin Times and Topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.
All this month, stream the funniest films for free on Pluto TV. Watch comedy classics like Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, and Mean Girls. Or drop in for a Tyler Perry marathon with a Madea family funeral and Madea's witness protection. Pluto TV also has hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and TV shows like Get Shorty, Be Cool, Key and Peele, Comedy in Color, and more. And no contracts, no subscriptions, no fees, no joke. So download the Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start laughing today. Pluto TV, drop in, watch free.
You're about to hear a preview of the Jordan Harbinger Show about how you can be affected by ransomware and cyber attacks on the rise now all over the world.
We still don't know just how deep the Russians are into our government systems. So it's going to be at least a year or more before we can stand up and confidently say we've eradicated Russian hackers from nuclear labs, the Department of Homeland Security, the Treasury, the Justice Department. How do you trust that any of the software you're using is secure and not a Russian Trojan horse? We live in the glassiest of glass houses. That makes escalation, you know, that much more of a risk. We're getting close enough that I think we're going to see a cyber attack within the next 4 years even that causes substantial loss of life.
For more with Nicole Perlroth on what the U.S. should do to push back against cyber warfare, check out episode 542 on The Jordan Harbinger Show.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called Needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.